welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally, 7 days a week here in the United States, and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the bird flu epidemic when we come back. You know, if you have an income of $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 of that into the Social Security Fund, Social Security taxes. Well, that's, of course, if you're self-employed, paying that 15% tax. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income when you go to pay your income tax on that same $50,000? Shouldn't you subtract the $7,650 from your $50,000 and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying the 17% tax a second time on the full $50,000? Now, you know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of the $50,000 in Social Security tax. Then they make you pay 17% of the same $50,000 in income tax. Now, that means that you paid the 17% on that $7,650 Social Security payment twice. And that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from everyone that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears or Penny's or your credit card company charged you twice, like Social Security and the IRS does? I thought you'd think that's just kind of special. Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, the school, Tax and Status, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were reviewing the Foreign Affairs magazine, Foreign Affairs article on the next pandemic. Now, remember, we've been discussing this thing of the newsworthiness of this bird flu. And I suppose it's newsworthy just because it's a news story. But this pandemic flu has gone way beyond a news story, and it is now into full-blown propaganda. And we are being sold bird flu. I'm not quite sure why we're being sold bird flu or what the portent for the future is. I'm not a prophet or a prognosticator. I don't know any more than I read in the papers, just like you do. But I've been around for a while, and when I watch the government, the news media, hammer away on something for a while, I've grown to be alert to that, and it raises red flags in front of my eyeballs, and I say, hey, wait a minute, these guys are trying to sell me something. These guys are trying to get into my back pocket here. What is this going on here? At least I'm alerted to the fact they may rape, rob, and pillage me just like they do you and everybody else, but at least I know that I'm getting raped, robbed, and pillaged, and I have a chance to get some Vaseline out and ease the pain a little bit. So going on here in the next pandemic here in foreign affairs, what once was lost. Nearly half of all of the deaths in the United States, going back to 1918 with this thing called the Spanish flu that they have now resurrected, by the way. We now have Spanish flu in the laboratories. We've gone over to Finland and we dug some bodies out of the frozen turf over there so that we could get this Spanish flu that killed 50 million people around the world back at the end of World War I. We've got it back in the laboratory. I don't know what the hell we're going to do with it or why anybody in his right mind would want it, but then, you know, we've got it. It's like smallpox and anthrax. couple of neat, real neat diseases here. So they've got it. Now, going back to 1918, where this flu got started, some 675,000 Americans, and that's about 0.6%, that's 0.6% of the population of 105 million, and the equivalent of about 2 million American deaths today. In other words, it would kill about 2 million people today at the same rate. Well, they perished from the Spanish flu. Now, the average life expectancy for Americans born in 1918 was just 37 years. It was down from 55 years in 1917. All right, let's underline that. Life expectancy in 1 year between 1917 and 1918 dropped to 37 years from 55 years in just 12 months. Now, that's pretty significant, wouldn't you say? I mean, you got a lot of people dying here pretty damn fast. And although the doctors then lacked the technology to test people's blood for flu infections, scientists reckon that the Spanish flu had a mortality rate of just less than 1% of those who took ill in the United States. It would have been much worse had there not been milder flu epidemics in the 1850s and in 1889. It caused by similar but less virulent strains, which made most elderly Americans immune to the 1918-19 strain. The highest death tolls were among young adults ages 20 to 35, and that's exactly what this bird flu has done. It's killing people that are in their mid-years, 20 to 35. It's not killing the old, not killing the young, it's killing those in the middle. Spanish flu in 1918 wasn't killing the old, wasn't killing the young, it was killing those in the middle, 20 to 35. And it got started in the army. And it got started from the vaccinations that were being given to the soldiers in the army. In other words, the government, whether they did it intentionally or whether it was accidental. What the hell difference does it make? 50 million people ended up dead as a result of it, whether it's a mistake or it's intentional. And I'm here to tell you the same thing today. What difference does it make if it's germ warfare and it's intentional, or it's an act of God and it's accidental? You'll be just as dead. Now, if your goal in life is to live to be 110 and die of old age in bed with your shoes off, then you need to solve this flu problem. It's not going to kill everybody, but it's going to kill a bunch. And from what we saw in Bible prophecy in the last couple of programs, it appears that the God of Abraham is intending to kill approximately 25% of the world's population, according to his own statements now in Revelation 6. Remember these four horsemen over here? About 25%. And he's going to use such things as war, famine, and death. Now, death is kind of a broad generalization. I think death would cover a multitude of things like maybe a hurricane, maybe an earthquake, maybe an Asian flu. Death. Now, that's 1/4. Now, boys and girls, there's a statement over here in Psalm verse 90. I'm going to break in right here in this Foreign Affairs article. I'm going to read you a little story here. Psalms around, chapter 90, 91, something like that. Let me see if I can find it. God says, you're going to be living in a time. It's in Psalm 91, verse 7, where it says, 1,000 shall fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come nigh to thee. Have you ever seen 1,000 dead people? Now, over in Kashmir and India and Pakistan right now, they just had an earthquake over there, killed 54,000 people, the latest count I saw the other day. Now, I would imagine there are some people over there that have seen 1,000 dead bodies, 1,000 people dead, stretched out on a soccer stadium somewhere on the football field, wrapped up in cloth, you know, in sheets and one thing and another, dead waiting to be buried. 10,000, that's another story. You ever seen 10,000 bodies? Well, you know, if you were in some big battle, you know, war, like World War I, there were three or four battles in which both sides would get out there on the battlefield and start killing each other. 40,000 people, 45,000 people killed in one day in one battle. The survivors of that battle could say, yes, I believe I saw 10,000 dead. on one side and 1,000 dead on the other. But boys and girls, that boggles my mind. You know, I have never seen 11,000 dead bodies, and I hope to God I never do. I'm not excited about that at all. But here's a prophecy that says you're going to see that. Somebody's going to see that. 10,000 on one side, 1,000 on the other. But it won't happen to you. Well, I hope it doesn't happen to me. I hope I can be spared the visible evidence of it. But you know, we're talking about biblical proportions here. You know, when people talk about really bad things, they say, my God, that's biblical proportions, like Noah's flood, or Sodom and Gomorrah, or the destruction of the Egyptians in the Red Sea. You know, we're talking about killing hundreds of thousands of people in one fell swoop. And we just saw that now, last December. Remember December 2004, over in the Indian Ocean, big earthquake right off of Indonesia's island of Sumatra, killed 300,000 people. Latest numbers I saw, 310,000. 310,000 people. It's not the greatest event in the history of the world, but it was right up there amongst them. There's been some examples of 500,000 people, 400,000, 300,000 people being killed in these kinds of biblical events in the past, but it's rare. So get ready for this, because that's what these boys are talking about. And remember I said, now they're not talking about if it happens, they're talking about when it happens. That's a prophecy. These guys already have this flu virus. They've created it in the laboratories, if nothing else. I would imagine that if Osama bin Laden could have unleashed a Hurricane Katrina upon us, he would have done it. But I don't think we can blame Katrina on Osama bin Laden, and I don't think we can blame it on George Bush either. I think that what we're dealing with here is the God of heaven is coming uncorked. Now, of course, that doesn't fit in with people's religion, but then I'm a plumber. So don't give me that religious crap, because I'm not a religionist. I'm a plumber. Don't forget that. Now, the Spanish flu got its name because Spain suffered from an early and acute outbreak, but it did not originate there. Its actual origin remains uncertain. The first strain was mild enough to prompt most World War I military forces to dismiss it as a pesky ailment. When the second strain hit North America in the summer of 1918, however, the virus caused a surge of deaths. First hit was Camp Funston, an army base in Kansas. All right, so let's correct that. I said it was not Fort Laramie. I said it was, there's another up there. I'll think of the name of it here in a minute, but it was Fort Camp Funston. So let me underline that and correct that mistake there. I said it was another camp here the other day. The army base in Kansas, where young soldiers were preparing for deployment to Europe. The virus then spread swiftly to other camps and on troop ships crossing the Atlantic, killing 43,000 U.S. military personnel in the first 3 months. You got that? Now listen, you Americans are watching the news every night, aren't you? And every night they remind us that 2,000 soldiers have been killed in Iraq, right? 2,000. For crying out loud, don't you think it's time for us to grow up and get real? In World War I, 43,000 died in the first 3 months from the crummy flu, for crying out loud. Let's get our numbers in perspective. 2,000 dead in Iraq is a cheap price to pay for a war. Those terrorists over there can't lay a glove on us. That's what the bottom line is. If we continued on and they kill 5 Americans every day, and we continue on killing or capturing 20 of them every day, which is what the ratio is, we're getting 4 of them to every one they're getting of us, they're going to run out of men before we do. Attrition will win the war in Iraq, but I don't think Americans have the stomach to stick it out. I said that before, and I'll say it again. Americans don't have the guts. They don't have what it takes to be a world power. And that's why America is disintegrating. But going on, the virus then spread swiftly to other camps and on troop ships crossing the Atlantic, killing 43,000 U.S. military personnel in the first 3 months. And despite the entreaties of the military surgeon general, President Woodrow Wilson ordered continued shipments of troops aboard crowded naval transports, which soldiers came to call death ships. And by late September of 1918, so overwhelmed was the War Department by influenza that the military could not assist in controlling civic disorder at home, including riots caused by epidemic hysteria. Worse, so many doctors, scientists, and lab technicians had been drafted into the military service that civilian operations were hamstrung. Now, that's what happened past tense. You might not have heard that story. Well, get used to it, because if this thing comes unhinged the way they're predicting it over here, you're going to have chaos. It's going to affect the economy worldwide. We're going into worldwide depression. So plug that one into your scenario as you prepare to live through this epidemic, if in fact it does come to pass. And I say if in fact it comes to pass. You know, SARS never came to pass. And many times, like back in the 1970s, Gerald Ford, you know, was very famous. He rolled up his sleeve and they gave him a shot of that swine flu. Remember that? And the swine flu caused more deaths and more problems from its side effects than the flu caused. Which is another reason why I told you the other day, I'm going to avoid those vaccinations and those pharmaceutical medicines and those witch doctor potions like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, that's just me. But I'm not going to get involved in that kind of crap at all. But under these conditions, influenza swept from the most populous U.S. cities to extraordinarily remote rural areas. So if you think you're going to run off to Bismarck, North Dakota from Chicago and escape it, you can forget that. Because you can best well be informed that somebody from Bismarck, North Dakota is going to go to Chicago and get exposed and come back to Bismarck. And then somebody in Bismarck is going to get exposed, and they're going to go out to some little village and some little hamlet and some little towns all over North Dakota. What the bottom line is, you're going to have to be able to build an immune system that can ward off this flu. You're going to get exposed to it whether you like it or not. And if your immune system is weak, you're going to get the flu. And if it's too weak, you're going to die from it. That's what the bottom line is. It's what happened the last time. It's what happened with the bubonic plague. And then, of course, you can blame it all on the Jews, because they're not going to be dying like everybody else. And that's because Jews don't eat pig and other unclean foods. Jews have, and so do Muslims, by the way, have a higher resistance to disease than do Christians. And that's because they have a healthier lifestyle and a healthier diet. Oh, and by the way, the vegetarians are going to make out a lot better than those of you that eat pig. I call them pig-eating Christians the other day. Remember that? Vegetarians are going to come out better. So, you know, take your pick. You can blame it on the Adventists. You can blame it on the Jews. You can blame it on the Muslims. You know, and they'll be called terrorists. You know, so every one of these Muslims over here is poisoning our water, poisoning our food. They're in our midst over here. No, it's your weak immune system. That's what it's going to boil down to. And under these conditions, this influenza swept from those populous U.S. cities to the extraordinarily, I'm going to underline the word, extraordinarily remote rural areas, like Xenia and Kettenpalm, California. I mean, up in the mountains of the Trinity Alps, for crying out loud, so far away from anybody else that you'll be amazed when this disease strikes you in this little village. Its actual origin remains uncertain. Explorers discovered empty Inuit villages in what are now Alaska and the Yukon Territory. It hit the Indians in the Yukon and Northwest Territories that were so far removed from the battlefields of Europe that how in the hell could these people have got it? And the villages are just empty. Killed them all. Wiped them out. Like smallpox did the Indians when the white man came to North America. their entire populations having succumbed to the flu. Many deaths were never included in the pandemic's official death toll, such as the majority of victims in Africa, Latin America, Indonesia, the Pacific Islands, and Russia, then still in the throes of revolution. What is known about the toll in these regions is staggering. For example, influenza killed 5% of the population of Ghana in 2 months. Let's extrapolate that up. Ghana, 5% of their population in 60 days. If you have 300 million Americans and you take 300 and times 0.05, that would be 15 million Americans. That would be like killing the entire population of Los Angeles and Chicago. Could you believe that? Now, that's what has happened past tense. We're not talking about, well, here's what might happen. We're talking about here's what happened with the Spanish flu. 5% in Ghana in 2 months. 20% of the people of Western Samoa died. Let's try that one on. You got 300 million people in the United States. If it were to kill 20%, which is what it did in Samoa, in one of the, you know, those islands out in the Pacific, times 0.05, it would kill, 15-20%, 300 times. 0.20 is 60 million Americans. You see why these guys are using these kind of big numbers? They're programming us. They're getting us ready for it. That's what tells me they've already got it. Otherwise, it would be a news story that we're going to report on, kind of like the attack on Pearl Harbor. They reported the attack on Pearl Harbor after it occurred. They weren't telling us, hey, these Japs over here are going to attack Pearl Harbor. And then when they did, well, see, we told you. Then you'd have known that, hell, these guys knew what the Japs were going to do. Now, of course, they did, but they kept that secret. But that's another story for another day. Now, the official estimate of 40 to 50 million total deaths is believed to be a conservative extrapolation of European and American records. In fact, many historians and biologists believe that nearly a third of all humans suffered from influenza in 1918 and 19, and that of these, 100 million died. 100 million died. Remember I said biblical proportions? I'll tell you what I think is coming down here, boys and girls. You take one-fourth of humanity. That's one-fourth of 6 billion people. Now, that's 1.5 billion people. I think over the next 10 or 15 years, we're going to see that. The world is setting itself up for that. You know, we've been out here, we've been polluting our environment, polluting the air. We've created nuclear weapons, and now we're involved in this Orwellian perpetual wars for perpetual peace. The economy of the world is on the knife's edge. We have total fiat currencies in every nation in the world. The biggest economy in the world is the United States. We represent 20% of the world's economy, and we're bankrupt, and when we go down, everybody in the world goes down with us. And that's just the way that game is played. That's why everybody in the world is loaning us money to keep the ship afloat as long as possible. Nobody, not the Chinese communists, not the Russians, not the Republicans, the Democrats, the communists, the socialists, the fascists, nobody wants to face reality. And the reality that we're facing, boys and girls, is not pleasant. And you need some solutions to that. You need to get prepared. The guys that are prepared the best will live through it the best. Your standard of living will be better if you're debt-free. Now, if you think you want to buy into this housing bubble, get right after it. Go out and buy two. Get one for me and one for you. But I'm going to stay out of it. I'm going to stay debt-free. I'm going to concentrate on solving the immediate problems that I need to solve right here in Isabella, Missouri, to see whether or not I can give myself a little better chance of surviving all of this insanity that I see going on around me. We got a balance of payments deficit, boys and girls, that boggles the imagination. It's $700 billion for the year 2005. It's going to top $700 billion. That's what we're going to buy over what we sell or what we export. and that has to be financed. And then we got this other problem over here with our federal budget deficits. They run around $500 billion a year. They tell us it's less than that, but then they lie to us a lot. Boys and girls, if you take all of the surplus money in the world from everybody that saves a buck anywhere in the world, there's only $800 billion in the world to borrow, and we Americans are already at $1,300 billion. That's what we're buying and borrowing and spending, and that's just the federal budget deficit and the balance of payments deficit, and that doesn't include the state and local governments. America is borrowing $3 billion a day to keep this joke alive. I don't know when it's going to end, but I can tell you this. At some point in time, somebody is going to wake up and say, the Americans are naked. They ain't wearing any clothes. They're flat ass broke. The other day I was watching the news, and this guy says, America, the richest nation in the world, can surely afford to do better than this. Where in the hell are these people's minds? America, the richest nation in the world? Excuse me. America's $43 trillion in debt. That's not wealth. Since when is debt wealth? You come up to a guy, and he's got a mortgage on his house for $200,000. He got three cars in the driveway, and all of them are mortgaged. Every stick of furniture in the house is mortgaged. The guy's making $20,000 a year. And of the $20,000, he can't make ends meet, so he's borrowing on his credit cards, and his credit cards are maxed out. He's still making his payments. And you say, this is the richest guy in the neighborhood? My God, you know, we Americans have been in public school for so damn long, we can't add, subtract, multiply, or divide, and we're as dumb as a box of rocks. And we call America the richest nation in the world. If that isn't head up, wrong end of anatomy, I don't know what the hell is. Richest nation in the world. Gets better, though, as we read the story. In the last years of the 19th century and the early years of the 20th century, a series of important scientific discoveries spawned a revolution in biology and medicine that led pioneers such as Herman Biggs of the city of New York, he is a doctor, to create entire legal and health systems based on the identification and control of germs. By 1917, the United States and much of Europe had become enthralled by the hygiene movement, keep clean. Impressive new public health infrastructures had been built in many cities. Tens of thousands of tuberculosis victims were isolated in sanatoriums. I'm gonna underline that. Isolated in sanatoriums. Do you know what that means? That's called quarantine. You take the sickies among you and you put them outside the camp so that they can't infect the healthy people in the camp. So that you can stop the spread of disease. You know, you can get a typhoid Mary who goes over to Chicago, picks up the flu, comes back to Bismarck, North Dakota, never shows any symptoms, spreads it to everybody that's around him over here, and he never gets infected. That's what quarantine's all about, and that comes from the Bible, boys and girls. It didn't come from the hygiene movement of the 1890s. What they really discovered over here was that, hey, maybe God knew something that we ought to pick up on. I've mentioned this before. Let me do it again. The nation in the world that has the lowest incidence of AIDS is Cuba. You know those commie pinkos down there in Cuba? And that's because they practice quarantine. And the nations that have the highest spread, highest incidence of AIDS are those countries in Africa where they believe that raping a virgin when you have AIDS will cure it. Yeah. It spreads it to the little children over there, those perverts over there, those ignorant savages running around and beating their way through the Ituri rainforest of the Belgian Congo with these crazy beliefs. Hell, you think that's backward? Here in America, we don't practice quarantine. We send children who have AIDS to daycare centers where those little children have 32 body fluids just like you and I do. Tears, saliva, urine, feces. And Those kids put blocks in their mouths and put them down, and other kids come along and put those same blocks in their mouths. We don't think anything about that. Talk about hygiene. Talk about going to public school for too long. And then they tell us, oh, well, you know, AIDS is not spreadable through casual contact. Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what, all you boys and girls out there, you go practice your casual contact. Let me stay the hell away from you. That's the way I'll deal with it. I'll practice quarantine. Since you won't practice quarantine by isolating the sickos, I'm well, I'm healthy. I'm going to isolate myself from you sickos. In the last years of the 19th century and early 20th century, we got on to this thing called hygiene. That's where God told the people, go out and wash yourselves. Keep clean. Bury your excrement. Carry a paddle on your side and bury it. Don't flush it down the Mississippi River for the people in St. Louis to drink. Bury it, you people up in Iowa. I know it's a wild new concept over here, but then, you know, we got modern medicine. You know, we've got antibiotics. So we can flush our sewage down the river. You people in St. Louis can drink it. Don't worry about it. We got antibiotics. We'll take care of you. Go ahead and get AIDS, herpes, or VD, and we'll give you an organ transplant. Talk about insanity now, huh? Well, 100 million people died during this flu epidemic back in World War I. And these guys are sitting here telling us now that we can get ready for another big flu epidemic. Now, it may not come in 2005. Maybe it'll come in 2006 or 2007 or 2008. I don't know when they're going to unleash this on us, but I'd get ready for it, boys and girls, because I suspect that they're going to unleash this upon us one of these days. Influenza's arrival shattered the hope that scientists still had virtually no understanding of viruses generally and of influenza in particular. The hygienic precautions and quarantines that had proved so effective in holding back the tide of bacterial diseases in the United States proved useless. In fact, it even proved to be harmful in the case of the Spanish flu. As the epidemic spread, top physicians and scientists claimed its cause was everything from tiny plants to old dusty books to something called cosmic influence. It wasn't until 1933 that a British research team finally isolated and identified this influenza virus that we call the Spanish flu. And we thought we had the damn thing destroyed until somebody went over to Finland, dug up some dead bodies, and brought it back to life. Hang on here, I got to give you a reminder before we go any further. And that is that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States. We're also heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Let me remind you that that's not a compact disc, a CD. In fact, I think there's 3 CDs, if I remember right. I don't handle that, and I don't send those out. But when you call in here, we'll send you this package, and you'll have these 3 CDs. You can stick them in your player in your car, and you can drive down the road, and you can listen. And you can hoot and jeer and holler and jump up and down, paw the ground, bite the bushes, and do those things that make people happy and ecstatic. Or you can just throw them out the window and say, that guy's crazy as a coon, I don't listen to that crap anymore, and go about your business in life. But it doesn't cost you anything to listen, and it's highly entertaining. All right, let me give you one more quick reminder here. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, so don't blame anybody else. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station, but they should. For more information about the law or an editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Let me give you a reminder here, too, about this article that we're covering here in this broadcast. Foreign Affairs Magazine. Just go to the website, foreignaffairs.org, www.foreignaffairs.org. And you're looking for The Next Pandemic by Lori Garrett. Good article. Tells you right where all the bodies are buried. What else we got here? Most strains of the flu do not kill people directly. Rather, death is caused by bacteria which surge into the embattled lungs of the victim. But the Spanish flu that circulated in 1918-19 was a direct killer. Victims suffered from acute cyanosis, a blue discoloration of the skin and mucous membranes. They vomited and coughed up blood, which also poured uncontrollably from their noses and, in the case of women, from their genitals. The highest death toll occurred among pregnant women. As many as 71% of those infected died. Got that, girls? 71% of infected pregnant women died. If the woman survived, the fetus invariably died. Many young people suffered from encephalitis as the virus chewed away at their brains and spinal cords, and millions experienced acute respiratory distress syndrome, an immunological condition in which disease-fighting cells so overwhelm the lungs in their battle against the invaders that the lung cells themselves become collateral damage and the victims suffocate. Had antibiotics existed, they may not have been much help. Had they existed, they may not have been much help. Now, I told you the other day about colloidal silver. I think it was in the last program. Colloidal silver. Silver is an antiviral agent. It kills virus. Antibiotics do not. Now, in ordinary flu cases, the flu doesn't kill you. It weakens you and you get pneumonia and die from a bacterial infection. This flu, this bird flu, just like that Spanish flu in 1918, kills you directly. And those are the symptoms that I just read to you. Not a very pleasant way to go. So now let's start thinking about this for a minute, boys and girls. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. One of these days, I'm going to be sitting here at my desk, and I'm going to swallow, and I'm going to feel a little bit of a sore throat. And immediately, I'm going to get up and go take two or three charcoal tablets. And then I'm going to go get my bottle of colloidal silver and pour a little bit into a glass and down it. I'll pour a little colloidal silver into a glass, drink it down, and chase it down with a little Jack Daniels or something to kill the taste. Now, I'm just teasing you a little bit there. Actually, colloidal silver is odorless, colorless, and tasteless, and you put it in the water and you drink it, and you'll hardly know that you're drinking colloidal silver, except for the little cloudy color that you're going to see in the glass. That's what I'm going to do. And now here's where your problem lies. This stuff will kill you in 2 days. Did you hear that? I read it to you last time. It'll kill you in 2 days. So pay attention. From the time that you get a sore throat and you say, oh, this is probably nothing, it's probably just a cold or something like that, and so you drink a little lemon juice and water, the next day it's getting worse. You got muscle aches and pains and one thing and another, and the wife jumps on you and she says, we've got to take you down to the hospital. By the time they get you down to the hospital and come to the conclusion that you've probably just got the flu, how in the hell are they going to know if you got the regular, ordinary flu or you got the real thing here? So they send you back home, and the next day, you're so damn sick, you can't get out of bed, and they call the ambulance, haul you off to the hospital. Oh, my God, this guy's got the bird flu over here. By then, it's too late. You haven't got time to dink around like that. You got to get on top of this before the fact. You get on top of it before the fact by building your immune system. You get on top of it by having a stock of colloidal silver and some charcoal so that when this event transpires, you're not dependent upon Roach and Company and whether or not they got Tamiflu or whether or not you've got some snake venom or monkey pus to shoot up. You take care of it because you're going to be the only guy there to take care of it. I showed you that last time. What's going to happen when you get to the emergency room in the hospital? They're going to be overwhelmed with thousands of other people that have the same symptoms that you have. And if you think you're going to get put on a respirator over there, there's an extra 25,000 in the country. What the hell are you going to do with 1 million people, 100,000 people that have this respiratory infection? They all need respirators, and you got 25,000 of them? I mean, come on, guys, let's grow up and get real. That isn't going to happen. Now, in January 1976, 18-year-old private David Lewis staggered his way through a forced march during basic training in a brutal New Jersey winter. By the time his unit returned to base at Fort Dix, Lewis was dying. He collapsed, and he did not respond to his sergeant's attempts at mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. In subsequent weeks, U.S. Army and CDC scientists discovered that the virus that had killed Lewis was swine flu. And although no other soldiers at Fort Dix died, health officials hit the panic switch. F. David Matthews, then Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, promptly declared that there is evidence that there will be a major flu epidemic this coming fall. The indication is that we will see a return of the 1918 flu virus. That is the worst and most virulent form of flu. In 1918, 500,000 people died in the United States, and the projections are that this virus will kill 1 million Americans in 1976. All right, now you remember that? Now, that's the old story of the little boy cries wolf. Back in 1999, they were telling us that there was going to be this breakdown in the computers. Remember, they called it Y2K? So I said, well, geez, if that comes to pass and this Y2K thing occurs and the country's computers break down, the economy will break down, and we're going to have some bad problems. So like a lot of other Americans, I went out and I stocked up this and I stocked up that, and I made sure I had a few extra rolls of toilet paper and 3 or 4 pounds of pinto beans stockpiled in the kitchen. And Y2K came and Y2K went, and nothing happened. And right away, people started grousing, and I said, blah, 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 damn government anyway, you know. So they blamed it on the government. And so they all sold their pinto beans and got rid of their generators and one thing and another. I didn't. I just kept my pinto beans on the counter. They're up in the cupboard. And I still got my extra 2 or 3 rolls of toilet paper over here waiting for the next event to transpire. Didn't cost me anything. Now, let me tell you another little story here. When I was a kid back in the 1940s, we were getting ready for, we were involved in World War II. We had these things called Victory Gardens. And I lived in a little town called Corbell, California, up in Northern California. It's up in Humboldt County, a little mill town. And all the people, about 100 houses in this town, all the people in this town had what was called a pantry. This pantry, I don't know, was probably 6-8 feet wide and probably 10-12 feet long, and it had shelves on both sides and down the middle, and there's all these jars of canned goods. And I can remember my granny going over to Mrs. Johnson and over Mrs. Birchfield's, and all these ladies were getting together, and they were making string beans and canning pears and apples and making applesauce. And God, these ladies, they're just working their hearts out, and they put all this food up on the shelves. Of course, I'm a little kid, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. I don't know what's going on here. Later on, I found out that what was going on was we were preparing for the winter. We were putting up enough food to last our family for a year, and so was everybody else in the town. When we bought sugar, it came in 100-pound sacks. When we bought flour, it came in 100-pound sacks. When we bought beans, it came in 100-pound sacks. We didn't buy 5 pounds of this and 2 pounds of that and 3 cans of this and 2 cans of that. Hell, when we went out and bought something, you know, we bought it. We had pinto beans for months to come. Now, the other day, there was a hurricane hit Miami. And this lady was down there just bawling her eyeballs out and complaining about the government and how she followed the FEMA guidelines, and she had 72 hours of this, that, and another thing on hand, and the damn electricity didn't come back on. Well, you know, boys and girls, back in World War II, we didn't know what was going to happen next week. We were expecting the Japanese to invade California. We were expecting troop transports off the coast of Humboldt Bay with little Japanese fellers coming ashore over there to occupy and raise hell with us. We didn't know, but we were prepared for it. We had plenty of food. If the power went off, it was no big deal. If it goes off for a week or 10 days or 2 weeks or 2 months, it's okay. It'll be inconvenient, but it isn't going to threaten our lives, our health, or our property. But today, Americans have become so dependent upon electricity and Walmart and the infrastructure and the gas station. Nobody has any gasoline. And they're standing in long lines. I mean, I saw lines the other day. It was on the news. And it was, I don't know, 2-3 miles long. People in their cars were lined up for miles. Didn't you people think about that before the hurricane struck, to go down and fill up the tank of your car first? To go down and fill up 2 or 3 5-gallon cans of gas so you'd have them out behind the garage before the hurricane got there? Didn't you people think about, gee, the power might be off for a week or 10 days. My God, the power still isn't on in many places where Katrina and Rita hit. And hell, that was a month or two ago. Don't you people ever think about the future, that maybe the power grid may go down in America? Haven't you heard that if the power grid goes down in America, it would take 30 days to get it back up and running again? 30 days. And maybe they're lying to you. Maybe they could do it in 2 weeks. But don't you think you ought to be prepared for 30 days? And if they tell you 30, shouldn't you be prepared for 60? So I'm sitting here waiting for the power grid to go down. One of these days they tell us it's going to happen, just like New Orleans is going to get flooded. They tell us, hey, the power grid's going to go down. Then they tell us, just like this influenza here, they're not telling us if it goes down, they're telling us when it goes down. It's going to happen. That tells me that somebody's going to pull the switch, pull the plug here one of these days. One of these orchestrated terrorist events. What the hell difference does it make if your government pulls the plug or Osama bin Laden pulls the plug? Aren't your lights going to go out? Isn't your elevator going to stop? And maybe between floors? Don't you people think that you maybe ought to be prepared for a power outage for 30 days living in Miami, Chicago, or New York? It's happened before. What makes you think it isn't going to happen again? What makes you think that it isn't going to happen to you in your town in Bismarck, North Dakota? How are you going to live without power? I mean, you people can't even go to Walmart without electricity. They wouldn't know how to make change without a cash register telling them the answer. You know, you walk in and give somebody a $20 bill for a purchase of $17.56. If they didn't have an electronic computer there in the cash register to tell them how much change it was, that clerk, that girl standing there, could not make change. Not out of her head. Couldn't make change. They can't buy, sell, or trade. They can't pump gas without electricity, for crying out loud. Haven't you figured that out yet? Don't you think maybe you ought to have a little gasoline on hand to tide you over? I mean, I always try to keep 40, 50 gallons of gas here on the farm, you know, just in case. If I needed to go to Springfield, I'd go out and take a bunch of 5-gallon cans and fill up the chamine and go to town and come back. Whether or not there's any gasoline out here to be pumped. I mean, if push ever came to shove, of course, maybe I'm kind of an old fart in the net, and it's some kind of a fruitcake over here, stocking more than my 72-hour FEMA supplies, but this woman down here just bawling her eyeballs out, blaming George Bush and FEMA and everybody else because this hurricane came through Miami, knocked the power out, for crying out loud. It's like blaming Jews for bubonic plague, for crying out loud. Come on, guys! You blame the Jews because they charge interest and you go down and make the application? Don't you think that it's time that we take responsibility for our own actions? I mean, just once in a while. Just one time. I watch this kind of crap and it makes me want to puke. You know, Americans used to be self-sufficient. We used to be debt-free. We used to export from the United States, and we had a trade surplus. We used to be the world's number one creditor nation. Today, we're the world's number one debtor nation. You know, things used to be different in this country. Used to be a time when we didn't need a doctor. We could take care of ourselves. Today, if somebody gets sick, they got to run down to the damn pediatrician. A woman gets pregnant today, and it's a medical, a major medical emergency. Your old lady gets knocked up, and she can't have a baby unless she's got some pediatrician over here to deliver. Wonder what makes me always wonder, what in the hell were women doing 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 years ago? And what are you women going to do when the power goes out like it did down there in New Orleans and you're pregnant and you got to deliver a baby? Don't you think maybe you ought to learn how to do that naturally? I mean, without a cesarean section, we know women were having babies before the doctor came in to make his bulk payments and to do cesareans. Now, I don't blame doctors for doing cesareans. I mean, we've all got bills and we've all got sales to make. You know, I mean, after all, if you can sell that woman a $5,000 delivery as opposed to a $500 delivery, by all means, doc, get after it. Do it. I mean, if she's so damn dumb she doesn't know any better, sock it to her. Take her money. Sales are sales. But if you've been ripped off, you know, by doctors, and if you're concerned about your health and whether or not you're going to survive this flu thing over here, and these guys are practically telling you, if God doesn't deliver this flu, Monsanto will. And if it's not Monsanto, it'll be the boys at Fort Detrick, Maryland. Somebody's going to unleash this flu somewhere. That's the message that I'm getting. Now, back in 1976, when this swine flu came in here, remember what a debacle that turned out to be. Some of you guys probably can't remember. You know, you weren't born yet. But 1976, to me, you know, an old fart like me, wasn't all that long ago. Hell, it was just the other day. I had a kid born in 1976. Yeah, I had one of my children born in 1976. I can remember that like it was last week. Well, anyway, this Lewis guy died of swine's flu, and so the government went ballistic, and they said, well, we got to vaccinate everybody in the country. We got to get on top of this. That's what they did back in 1918, went out and vaccinated all these people. Now, listen what happened. At the time, it was widely believed that influenza appeared in cycles, and especially lethal forms surfacing at relatively predictable intervals. Since 1918-19, the United States had suffered through influenza pandemics, actually. It was more like an epidemic rather than a pandemic, but it was 1957, 58, 68, 69. The first caused 70,000 deaths, and the second, 34,000 deaths. In 1976, scientists believed that the world was overdue for a more lethal cycle, and the apparent emergence of swine flu at Fort Dix seemed to signal that another wave had come. So we're going to protect all you people. George Bush said that the other day. My job is to protect the American people. Let me tell you, George, get the hell out of my life and don't protect George Gordon, would you? I want to keep government and government agents as far away from me as I can get. You know, they come along and they say, well, we're here to protect and serve. By God, I don't doubt it. You're there to protect and serve yourselves at my expense. So I'm a cynic. I don't want any protection from the government. I'll take care of myself. And I'll take care of my own family. I don't need the doctors. I don't need the hospitals. I don't need the government. I don't need FEMA. I don't even need electric power. If you shut the damn power off, I'll live just quite nicely. Remember, boys and girls, there was life before electricity, and there will be life after electricity. Some of us will live a little better than others. Now, the leaders of the CDC, now this is back in 1976, remember, boys and girls? The leaders of the CDC and the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare warned the White House that there was a reasonably high probability that a catastrophic flu pandemic was about to hit, but opinion was hardly unanimous, and many European and Australian health authorities scoffed at the Americans' concern. Unsure of how to gauge the threat, President Gerald Ford summoned the polio-fighting heroes Jonas Salk and Albert Sabin to Washington and found the longtime adversaries in remarkable agreement. A flu pandemic might truly be on the way. And besides that, it's good for business, and it's good for the stocks of Merck and Pfizer. So on March 24th, 1976, Ford went on national television, and he said, "I've just concluded a meeting on the subject of vast importance to all Americans," he announced. "I've been advised that there's a very real possibility, and unless we take effective counteractions, there could be an epidemic of this dangerous disease next fall and winter here in the United States, and I'm asking Congress to appropriate $135 million. My God, $135 million. Congress the other day, I just showed you yesterday, has appropriated $4 billion, $135 million, that's pocket change, for the production of sufficient vaccine to inoculate every man, woman, and child in the United States. That's what's coming. They're going to have enough vaccine to inoculate every one of you people and give you this flu. And if you survive, it'll be because your immune system was working beyond the ability of the flu virus to kill you." Now, that's the government coming in here. "We're going to save you. We're going to protect you." There isn't anything that government can't do half as well for twice as much. So if you want to buy half as much and pay twice as much, my God, partner, get after it, dude. Don't let me get in your way. I'm going to avoid that like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Colloidal silver and charcoal don't cost very much, and I got a bunch of it. And I can deal with the flu on my own, all by my little lonesome. I don't need the CDC or the National Health Service or George Bush or anybody else. And the last outfit that I need is that damn FEMA. And I think you people down in New Orleans and on the Gulf Coast are starting to get the drift. FEMA can't help you. And if they can, they're going to hurt you more than help. All right, now this vaccine producers immediately complained that they could not manufacture sufficient doses of vaccine in such haste without special liability protection. So Congress responded, passing a law in April that made the government responsible for the company's liability. That's what they did here with vaccines recently when Dick Armey did that. Listen, they shoot you up with these vaccines and you sue nobody, because they're immune from liability. By God, anybody sticking a needle in my arm, I want him to take full responsibility for the adverse reactions, or I'm going to stay the hell away from it. But that's right. The pharmaceutical companies are not liable for the damages that it causes you. So if your kid comes down with autism, or if somebody dies or goes to the hospital, you pay for it. Sit down, shut up, fold your hands and ride the back of the bus, brother. Well, that's the way that game's going to be played. So if you want to take that risk, it's your choice. And they had a bunch of lawsuits over here. Now, if you want to sue, you can sue the government. They got a special agency over there, and you can collect about 10 cents on the dollar. If you got $1 million worth of damages, you can probably get $100,000. So if you want to live as a vegetable for the rest of your life for $100,000, make your choice. I'm going to put my little arrow right here at the bottom of page 3. And we'll take it up right here when we come back, talking about the swine flu next time on the Law Hour and what the debacle did to us and what you can expect when you get the bird flu debacle when the government intervenes. Always remember, the government can do anything half as well for twice as much. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.